Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Happy Monday to you, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH. My name is Tommy Kester, along with Paul Savage, filling in for Jacob Albrecht as we make our way to another work week. It was a wild weekend in the world of sports, and we are going to break it all down for you over the next 2 hours right here on KFH. Don't forget, the IHOP hotline is open for you at 869-1240, where, by the way, IHOP is excited to bring back its all-you-can-eat pancakes deal between now and the end of the month, so you can call and connect with us anytime there. You can also watch our video stream and leave your comments on Facebook, on YouTube, on X. Also, we are live streaming on 12 News Connected. Like I mentioned, a lot to get to on the program today. It was nearly a disaster of a sports weekend around this area, at least when you're talking about both professional and college athletics. KU loses on the road at West Virginia. Kansas State loses on the road at BYU. The Royals get swept at home, making their playoff hunt a whole lot more difficult. And without a fourth quarter, fourth down stop on defense by the Chiefs in primetime, they nearly lost that game too in primetime on Sunday Night Football against the Atlanta Falcons. We will talk about all of that as we make our way through. But first off, Paul Savage, good morning to you, my friend.
How are you doing, my friend? Boy, there's a lot of sports this weekend. How much fun did you have? Because I had a ball, particularly, you know, with the Kansas City Chiefs game last night. Boy, that thing went back and forth. I was not convinced the Chiefs were going to win that game.
No, I wasn't. And to answer your question, I had very little fun this weekend
in watching sports.
I mean, just because the outcomes were so poor,
right?
At least with the teams that we follow. And, you know, I was sitting there like in the fourth quarter as the Chiefs were kind of sputtering offensively and, you know, having a hard time getting it together. I thought, man, if Kansas City loses this game, if they find a way to fall to Kirk Cousins and the Falcons in primetime, it might be one of the worst sports weekends that we've ever encountered in this part of the country.
I know. Then we could take it even a step further. My Baylor Bears lost. You know, my favorite WNBA team, the Fever, lost with Caitlin Clark. They lost. I mean, we can kind of go on with this on and on and on. My second favorite NFL team, the Cowboys, they lost. And by the way, what a disgrace. I guess we'll probably get to that later in the show. Tommy, that was a disgrace. That was a disgrace in terms of how you play defense in the NFL. But we'll get to that later. But I'll tell you what, other than the Chiefs winning, for the most part, it's been a tough weekend on everybody.
Yeah, we're going to try to figure out what's going on and dissect all of it over the next couple of hours on the program. And by the way, programming note, Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Wildcats, will be joining us in our very next segment. We're going to break down everything that happened in Provo on Saturday night in primetime, I guess after primetime.
Got to.
Big 12 after dark with the Wildcats taking on BYU. Definitely not the outcome that a lot of folks anticipated out of that game. So we'll talk to Wyatt Thompson coming up in our very next segment. And like I mentioned, we'll try to figure out again what's going on with the Jayhawks, who now set at 1-3, and we'll spend some time on the Kansas City Royals after one of the most abysmal homestands that we've seen in quite some time from Kansas City. But we're going to kick things off with that primetime Sunday Night Football game. The Chiefs on the road in Atlanta taking on the Falcons. Really, it was defense, Paul. That was the name of the game for the Chiefs. That's really what led them to victory, as Kansas City gets a 5-point win, 22-17. They do cover the spread, but it wasn't very pretty offensively for the most part. And it really, like I mentioned at the top of the show, took a fourth down stop as the Falcons were threatening after the 2-minute warning to score and take the lead for the Chiefs to ultimately pull that game out.
Well, that's exactly true. I mean, and there were a lot of aspects to this game, particularly when you're talking about the defense. But, you know, you got to give credit to the Kansas City Chiefs. Man, that fourth down, the last play on offense for the Falcons, a fourth and what, maybe a yard and a half, maybe about a yard. It might have been that close. But I can tell you this, to make the play they did and get off the field, that was like inspiration. That's what legends are made of. Those are the kind of plays that you talk about for a long, long time. I took a picture of the formation. I had to pause it after the play was run. I rewound my television set and went back and looked at that formation that the that the Falcons were set up in. And I wanted to see, because, you know, it goes so fast, boom, boom, and then the ball snapped. You can't really examine and break down how does the Kansas City Chiefs line up to that formation. Here's why they stopped it, Tommy. I don't know if this interests you or not. It always interests me how things are done on a football field. It's always interesting to me. Kansas City Chiefs lined up 11 players in the box. 11 players were in the box. Yeah. 11. Now, think about that. Now, there were also 9 gaps because with the formation with 2 extra tight ends to one side for the Falcons, there are a lot of gaps to cover. But there were basically 9 guys on the line of scrimmage for the Kansas City Chiefs and 2 linebackers. That was it. That was basically it. Other than that. But here's the beauty, and why I bring this up is because we've got to give a lot of credit to the defensive staff for the Kansas City Chiefs to line up like that. Here you are. Basically, the game's on the line. Really, the game is on the line. You know, you get a first down, then you got a few more shots at the end zone, and you may end up losing this game. I give the defensive staff a lot of credit because they knew it was going to happen. They got their guys lined up. They filled every gap. You know, whenever you have so many guys on the line of scrimmage, because everybody was in the box, nearly everybody was in the box other than a receiver who was about 2 to 3 yards off. I don't know if you count him in the box. I kind of count him in the box based upon the nature of the down and distance. So I'm going to call I'm going to stretch things a little and say he was in the box. And Kansas City put everybody in a stance, other than the 2 outside contained guys, in a stance, in a gap, every gap covered, 2 linebackers at 3 yards. Not 5 yards, not 6 yards, 3 yards. And I break this down because every once in a while, you've got to take your hats off to a defensive staff who not only did they make the play, they made the play because the defensive coaches lined them up and gave them the ability to make the play. I don't know if that's even worth bringing up. But
yeah,
it is to me.
I mean, it makes sense. Honestly, Paul, in real time, watching that final play, that defensive stop for Kansas City, my first thought, and of course I'm not a football coach, but my first thought was, you've got 4th and a yard or 4th and inches or whatever it was, right. And you're trying to kick out to the outside, like run the ball up the gut if you're the Falcons. But of course, if they've got all the gaps filled, Kansas City's defense, then that's going to be easier said than done. Now, like in retrospect, knowing that and going back, because I watched that too, like you did, I'm surprised that Kirk Cousins didn't check out of that and try to do something different. You know, if you had a receiver that was just a couple of yards off the line of scrimmage, you know, try to get it to him. If Kansas City's defense is getting everything stacked up in the box, then try to go over the top of that. Because that could have had, you know, quite a bit of success for the Falcons and ultimately won them the game. That's not what they did. And Kansas City's defense got, you know, quite a bit of pressure in there, and they were able to, you know, burst through. Nick Bolton and Leo Chenal had a great play on there. And remember, Paul, it wasn't an ideal defensive drive for Kansas City. I mean, the Falcons pushed the ball down the field.
Good point.
There were a couple of defensive penalties, including a pass interference call. There was a lot of things going on where I'm just thinking, yeah, this, and honestly, I posted this on social media in the moment. At one point I thought, you know what? Just let the Falcons score. Like, let the Falcons score.
Get the ball back.
Save your timeouts. Get the ball back. Because at that point, all you would need at minimum would be a field goal to tie the game and go to overtime.
Yeah.
But I'm like, man, like, just let them score and get the ball back. Now, ultimately, they were able to get the stop and win the game, but it was pretty tense down the line.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a weird way to look at it. You know, it kind of makes sense, you know, but it's one of those things where, let them score. That just goes against everything that you think of. But I get the point because, you know, strategically – that might make a lot of sense, and really it could have made a lot of sense. Put the ball in the hand of Patrick Mahomes, good things may happen. In fact, there's a good chance that good things will happen. So I get that point, and it's fascinating. But I also go back to coaching, too, because you're kind of right. You know something? Even if every gap is filled in a 4th and 1, if every gap is filled, you know what the mindset should be of an offense? We can get movement. Our bigs are better than their bigs. We're going to come off the ball. We're going to get underneath you. We're going to root you out, and we're going to get enough push that we can pick up 1 yard.
Right.
That is a mindset that great football teams have. you know, because
and they knew. I mean, I think everybody in that entire arena and anybody watching on TV knew that there was no possible way that they were going to do any kind of sneak with Kirk Cousins with, you know, the injuries that he sustained and all of that. Like, they're not going to sneak it with him. They're not going to do any kind of tush push. And so at that point, it became a little bit predictable, but I'm still thinking like, man, you don't think you could get half a yard by running it up the gut or even checking out of a, you know, a play to, you know, off tackle or whatever. Ultimately, it didn't work out for the Falcons. And it's wild to me. And we're going to have a lot more about the Chiefs as the show goes on, especially in hour number two. But it just is wild to me, Paul, thinking about the fact that the Chiefs are one of five teams remaining in the NFL that have a record of 3-0.
Right.
And in each one of those games, it basically looked like at one point or another, they had a really, really big chance or strong chance of losing each one of those games in the fourth quarter.
Right.
You know, whether it was the Ravens, you know, and Isaiah Likely, or the Bengals were pushing down the field and it took an interference call to turn that around for Kansas City. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, the Falcons are pushing down the field under the 2-minute warning. Mm-hmm. In every one of those games, I mean, let's just be real about it. They could just as easily be 0-3 right now, but yet they're 3-0. So the question that I want to pose to you, and this is something that I want you to think about.
Okay.
I don't want you to answer it right now.
All right.
We'll talk about it more in hour number two.
Okay, good. Okay.
Does at the end of the day, does it matter how good they're playing, or does it ultimately just matter that they're 3-0? Because I would imagine if you go into that locker room right now and you talk to any one of those players, Not a single one of them would say that to their standards, they feel like they've played a good, complete football game through 3 weeks.
Right. You want that answer now?
But they're 3-0. I mean, it's up to you. I mean, if you want to tease it, and then we can talk about it more, sure.
Okay, here's the answer. Of course, everything is about winning. There are no moral victories. They're 3-0. That's what you celebrate. This is the NFL, Tommy. By the way, do the Falcons pay their players?
Yeah, everybody pays their
Pays their players, right?
Yes.
So everybody's pretty darn good, aren't they? Everybody's getting paid. Everybody's making a lot of money. Everybody's good. You're not good, you're not in this league. So the most important thing in the world is the win. It's not moral victories. It's not the fact that you played them close. It's not the fact that I don't care if the winning touchdown is scored with 1 second left. The important thing is the W. The win, which is why I'm heartbroken from our game on Friday night on to Saturday. I'm heartbroken, but I'll get over it. But the point is winning. Winning's everything. Winning's everything from high school to the pros. It's winning is everything. The Chiefs are 3-0. And amazingly speaking, you know, not that many teams who have won a Super Bowl the very next year, 3-0. I think there's, a handful, maybe five, six teams in the history of the Super Bowl. Those teams have come back, champions have come back to go 3-0. It's just a handful. I'm shocked when I saw that stat. I was shocked to see that stat. But the point is that winning, Tommy, is everything. And by the way, I'm winning in Friday Football Picks.
Well, you are, and I will say that while I agree to an extent that 3-0, I mean, the win is the win, and that's the most important thing.
Yes!
The bottom line is that they're going to have to, at some point, it might not be right away, but at some point, they're going to have to play a better, complete game if they want the victory. And so that ought to be, at least in the back of their minds as they move forward, it has not worked out exactly the way that we've wanted it to. We've been able to be fortunate enough to get victories and done just enough to get the wins. They've got to get that turned around. We're going to talk more about the Chiefs.
All right,
we've got to take our first break of the show because on the other side, Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Wildcats, is going to join us.
All right.
And so we want to get to him and talk about Kansas State and what in the world happened in Provo, Utah Saturday night against BYU. So we will talk to Wyatt Thompson coming up on the other side of the break. More on the Chiefs. We'll talk about, is everything okay with Patrick Mahomes, and where has Travis Kelce been, and why can't the Chiefs score in the red zone? All of that coming up in hour number two. But again, on the other side, Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Wildcats, will join us. So stick around. We are just getting underway on a Monday. It's Sports Daily with Tommy Caster and Paul Savage coming right back.
thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Sports Daily on this Monday. Tommy Caster, Paul Savage in for Jacob Albrock, Max Power in for Jad Chambers producing the program today. We're joined by the voice of the Wildcats now, Wyatt Thompson, here on Sports Daily as we are every Monday on the program. Wyatt, first off, I tweeted it, I think, during the game on Saturday night that, you know, it just seems like weird things sometimes happen in Provo after dark, and it definitely seems like that was the case on Saturday night for the Wildcats.
That's well said. I don't know that I've ever seen a game in all of the years that I've done this change so rapidly in what seemed to be seconds. You know, you can go and say and be right that, hey, you got to score touchdowns there when K-State kicked the two field goals, and that's absolutely true. I think a couple of penalties really kind of kept BYU in it. And then when the fumble happens and they score, it's 10-6, and you're thinking, okay, this isn't great by any stretch of the imagination, but you can probably survive it. How will K-State look at that scenario? Will they be aggressive in the rest of the half and try to go score? Will they kind of just, okay, let's get to halftime. We're right where we need to be, down 10-6. And the next thing you know, you have an odd play and a pick and then a touchdown pass. And in a blink of an eye, it's 17-6, and they never really recovered. It kind of got worse as they went into the third quarter. And as Coach Klieman told us after the game, hey, second half, well, really from the last 2 minutes of the first half through the rest of the game, they did nothing well. Offense, defense, special teams, absolutely nothing. Crazy, crazy wild thing.
Yeah, it was wild, Wyatt, that, you know, it was the first time in almost 5 years that the Wildcats did not score a touchdown in a game. And it certainly seemed like things just snowballed out of control. I think everybody thought that, you know, BYU would be competitive at home in that environment, and the fact that they were going into that game 3-0. I don't think a lot of people had paid close attention to BYU nationally at that point. I thought it would be competitive. I don't think anybody had the thought in their mind that it would end up the way that it did.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious that they're better than they were a year ago. And sometimes that happens and you don't really see it. Let me explain what I mean by that. If you go back to the end of last year, they lost their last five. Jake Retzlaff, their quarterback, was the starter in four of those games. So you're going into this season with the perception that, same old Jake Retzlaff. But that's really not true. I'm not going to try to sit here and convince everybody that the guy's an All-American, but he's a lot better football player than I think most people understand. And he isn't just a game manager. He really creates some issues with the quarterback run. He can roll out and throw the football. They have just enough around him, I think, and they're just better. Then you throw into the mix there, too. I'm just being honest. Their defense is darn good. They're big. They're strong. They're physical. We talked about this last week that K-State was probably going to have some challenges, you know, attacking them. Now, with that said, K-State ran the ball enough and probably well enough to win the game. But, you know, The pass game wasn't good enough. The mistakes were clearly a big thing. And you look up and it's 38-9 and you shake your head and go, wow, this is nuts.
Well, you know, Wyatt, by the way, it's good to talk to you again. I always enjoy talking to you, Wyatt. It's always a lot of fun. But here's the observation. I'm just going to make a general observation, and you probably kind of touched on it in your own way already. But, you know, you look at the totals in this particular game, you know, K-State had twice the offense. Had twice the offensive yards of BYU and lost by the margin that they lost of. You know, the average person would look at the box score and say, well, if you didn't know what the score was, you'd look at the total yardage and you'd go, well, yeah. K-State probably won by two touchdowns would be my guess. It would be my guess if I didn't know better. Talk a little about how a team can be so productive on the offensive side of the ball, twice the yards of another team, and lose that game. There's got to be something that I'm not seeing. There's got to be something that I don't understand because this is so unusual. And it's not the fact they lost it by one or two or maybe in the last seconds of the game. They lost it decisively score-wise.
Well, a couple of things, and I think you said quite a bit there. There are some things that stick out to me. As an example, had I said to you Saturday afternoon at any time, K-State was going to have 72 plays and BYU would have 48, we both would have been jumping around the studio, right?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. 100%. That is right. Yeah.
Now, to combat the other way, if I'd have said to you BYU is going to score 21 points off turnovers,
oh,
the dancing goes away.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, it does.
I mean, it's as simple as that, at least for the most part. I sit here and I look at the numbers as an example. 72 plays for K-State, they average 5.1 yards per play. Okay? That's pretty good. They ran the ball for 228 yards, gave up only 92, 3.4 yards. But when you add those 21 points off turnovers, you add the catch that Roberts made right at the end of the half, which was terrific. There's just too much to overcome there, right? And then with this, I don't know about you guys. I'm just being honest with this. I don't know that I've ever seen a punt return touchdown quite like that one.
Yeah.
That was weird. There were poor pursuit angles, bad tackling. The guy muffed it and takes it to the house for 90. It just snowballed. Simply stated.
And, you know, there were some of those, of course, the punt return and like you mentioned, the turnovers that were just inexplicable, I think, you know, when you're watching that game and so unlike what we've seen from the Wildcats through the first 3 weeks of the season, especially when you contrast that with the way that the offense performed and executed just a week prior against Arizona, where they were the ones flexing on their opponent. The other side of it happened, the contrast of that happened against BYU over the weekend. You know, I think that watching the very end of that game and seeing the body language just overall, and Avery Johnson was one of them, but just overall, the word that it kept coming back to me was just kind of shell-shocked, you know, just shell-shocked that it snowballed to that point where the Wildcats, you know, lost by nearly 30 points after being favored by a touchdown on the road. In your mind, being around this program, what's the best way that Chris Klieman and the coaching staff can get this team to just sort of like wash the stink off from Saturday and move forward? Because they've got a top 25 matchup this weekend at home against Oklahoma State. So there's no time to sort of just like live in the crap that Saturday was. You've got to move on. You got to move on really quickly.
I think you said so much there, and it's totally right from my perspective. You know, how do you handle it, right? How do you handle it? I was thinking about that driving into work this morning. Here we are, favored by 7 on the road, hard place to play, all of that. Give BYU all the credit in the world.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, K-State just wasn't good enough. They weren't consistent enough. They settled for field goals when they should have probably had touchdowns. Think about if you get one touchdown there, okay, and the difference in that game, 10-0 as opposed to 6. I mean, just the whole thought process, the dynamics of it. But now you have a late game. We landed at 4:30 in the morning. So it's going to make sense that they're going to make us play at 11 o'clock this week, right?
Sure.
Yeah, right.
So, but that, you know what they, you know what the old sports cliche is? Excuses are for losers, right? You got to get ready to go. And this Oklahoma State team, remember a year ago when we went down there and they had just gotten beat by South Alabama and they were awful and blah, 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 blah. And I kept saying all week, don't buy into that now. They're going to be ready to go. I think they're going to be ready to go after losing at home to Utah, and I think K-State will be back up and ready to fight too. So there are 100 reasons why I think this is a monster game coming up this weekend, but that's part of the reason why. These teams have been consistent winners in this league and have for quite a while, and when they're challenged, they usually respond. Mm-hmm. I'm expecting both to do that again.
Right.
We'll see.
You know, I guess we got to bring this conversation around to Avery Johnson. Some might say he's not performing to where everybody thought he would be. I think he's probably on a journey of learning how to be a college quarterback. That's kind of what I would say at this point. I could be wrong. But Where are you at with Avery Johnson? Where do you think he is in terms of his upside still? And he's not there yet on his learning curve, on the progression. Is he performing where you thought he would be at this point? What's your take on Avery Johnson, Wyatt, at this point?
Perfectly good and fair question, right? I think all of us are asking, where is he really? And I think it would be fair to say, if you said that he's done a really pretty solid job so far, would he like a couple of throws back? Like as an example, let's go back to the throw late in the first half that Batty picked. I've looked at that thing 15 times, and I still can't figure out what they were trying to do or what he saw or didn't see or what have you. We've got Coach Kleiman later today. Maybe he can explain it, or Avery when he comes in too. But I guess I'm rambling a bit to say I was expecting some ups and downs, okay? The kid is uber talented, right? He handles most things as well as you can possibly do where you're at in the process of all of it. But you can't get by the fact that he still is gaining experience. And this was the first time, right? The first time in his life at this level that he's thrown two interceptions in a game. Kind of like what we said before with the team, how are they going to respond? I think Avery is really tough-minded. And I think he's, to a degree, a perfectionist. And I think he probably was the first guy in the film room when we got back, if I'm being honest. He's going to be fine. But I do think that for all of us, you two, me, the entire fan base, the expectations were really, really high. And I get it. Off the charts talent. But you also have to have just a skosh of patience and let the guy grow into this. There's very few. Hey, Arch Manning, how many picks did he throw Saturday against Louisiana Monroe? Two.
Yeah.
It is right. He did.
Yeah. Talking to Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Wildcats here on Sports Daily, you mentioned the word expectations, Wyatt, and let's start with Kansas State expectations as a whole for the season. And I also want to talk Big 12 here in just a moment, but for the Wildcats specifically, it's the conference opener for Kansas State on the road. They now set 0-1 in the conference. Doesn't mean by any stretch of the imagination that they're out of anything at this point. But when you do start your conference season 0-1, it makes that margin of error go down, quite a bit. And so you're going to have to play, pretty flawless football here moving forward in a Big 12 where it just looks like it's going to be a massacre and there are going to be teams beating up on each other week after week after week. So as far as expectations are concerned for the Wildcats, I would assume that really nothing changes even after the game on Saturday. Am I correct in assuming that?
Tommy, I think you're right on it. You can't let it change. There's too much football to be played. K-State, this is astonishing to me, but it's true. In the history of the league, they've been on the road to start league play like 23 out of 29 times.
Wow.
And haven't really done all that well in some of those games. And if you think about the history of the league, okay, going back to 96, okay, they won the championship in 2003 and 2012 and in 2022, that's not all bad, right? There's a long way to go. It's easy for me to sit here and say, and I think it is true, that Utah winning in Stillwater with what they have remaining probably means that they are really going to be in the championship hunt, right? They won that game in Stillwater with their backup quarterback.
Yeah.
Now, with that said, what about everybody else? You could say Iowa State, right? They haven't necessarily had any issues yet. Will they? Probably. Everybody else, other than maybe BYU, but BYU's got a hard road too. They still have to play at Utah and a lot of places. So, there have been people that have said that this Big 12 championship game could match teams with two conference losses. And I don't think that's I don't think that's saying it too wildly. You've got to take care of go week to week and not get too far ahead of yourself here. We got a long way to go till late November.
Yeah. And following up on that, Wyatt, I mean, you know, obviously Oklahoma State falls at home. They were a team that, you know, I think a lot of people had expected they would be in the Big 12 championship hunt. They still could be, but they set 0-1 to start conference play. Same with Kansas State. In Lawrence, I mean, the sky is falling for the Jayhawks right now. So that was a team that people thought could contend for a Big 12 title. It's just been, it's been wild so far. And I guess that what I just keep coming back to, and I would love to get your take on this since you're close to the conference in general. This was supposed to be a year that with OU and Texas leaving the Big 12, that the crown was up for the taking in the Big 12, and it still could be, but you've got a newcomer now in Utah that looks, at least just through one conference game, poised to be the class of the conference. What does that say about Big 12 football in general when you've got, you know, the dominant powerhouses gone, but as, at least as of now, and I know it's early, but at least as of now, none of the existing conference teams have been able to raise their hand and say, you know what, we're going to go out, we're going to take it right now.
And that's perfect. I mean, you're right on it, but we still have a long way to go.
Sure.
If that's an example, let's just for a second, just throw this out. Let's say from here on out, K-State runs the table and they're 11-1. Anybody going to really remember anything about the BYU game other than how bizarre it was for, you know, 6.5, 7 minutes? Probably not. Oklahoma State, think about the consistency in which they've operated over the 20 years that Mike Gundy's been there. And as I mentioned before, the world and the sky was falling when they lost to South Alabama last year at home. And they didn't just lose, they got smoked, right? They got pinched bad. Utah has made a statement. What I would say about everybody else is, and again, we're talking about KU, K-State, Iowa State, West Virginia, all of these teams that have been in the league trying to become that next, you know, next team that's the, right at the top of the league. Is there going to be anybody that is, you know, you said Oklahoma and Texas, and I get it, but Oklahoma was the more dominant of the two. I don't know if I'm being honest, I think Texas is probably better than Oklahoma right now, right? But over the last decade, you'd have to say Oklahoma's been the better team. It's hard to get to that point with such a small sample size right now. But all of us are trying to get there, right? Because it is, you're right, it is there for the taking. 100% true.
One quick question, if you don't mind, and this has to do with Utah. You brought up, Tommy brought up Utah. Tommy's right on this. I think Utah's going to be a power in this conference. Just a quick comment real quick. We're running out of time. But here's why I think Utah is going to be a factor. California football is going downhill with regards to colleges. You know, you got colleges going to play in the Big Ten. You know, who's a major college in? Where do you want to go if you're a California player and you want to play big-time football? Utah's right there. All of a sudden, California has always been open to Utah, but it's even opened up more now. It is fertile ground for a school like Utah. Is that why they may end up being as good as they're going to be? They could end up being unbelievably competitive in the recruiting wars in California. Wyatt, am I off on this?
No, I think that's legit. But I also have to be honest and say it isn't a given. I mean, if I'm being honest, Kyle Whittingham isn't going to be there over the next decade. Is he going to be there 2 more years, 3 more years, 5 more years? We don't know that. What we do know is as long as he's there, they're going to be good.
All right, fair enough.
Don't you think?
I do.
I mean, I don't think I'm being outrageous saying that. The guy is really good.
Yeah.
But Chris Kleiman's really good.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Mike Gundy's really good. I mean, there are some really good coaches in this league. And I know the sky is falling at KU. I get it. They're 1-3. Nobody saw that coming. But you know, they've got to be thinking over there that they can get this thing turned around, right? They got TCU this weekend and whatever. It's all about being consistent and being healthy. And I think with K-State, they've been a pretty consistent team. The other night, they were pretty consistent for the most part, other than about a 7-minute stretch. But they were not good from the last 2 minutes of the half through the end of the game. As we said in the beginning, they weren't good in any phase. And Tommy, you used the term shell-shocked. I think that's exactly what happened. You know, they were so solid defensively throughout most of the night, and you still get trucked. I don't know. I'm not saying it isn't a dent in the psyche of the team and from a confidence thing. And yet, to be honest, I really like the coaching. I really like the team leadership, and I expect them to bounce back. I just do.
Yeah, I mean, they can't let it snowball. They've got to shake it off. And that, I think that consistency, as you mentioned, Wyatt, will definitely come to play this weekend, because they've got probably a pretty pissed off Oklahoma State team coming to Manhattan.
Yeah, that's right.
Saturday morning, you know, and with another program that has their sights set on the Big 12 title. It's an early game, as you mentioned, 11 a.m. Wyatt at Bill Snyder Family Stadium. What do you guys have planned for the broadcast on Saturday morning?
Well, we're excited about being back home for one, but you know, we'll do the typical things. We'll visit with a couple of players. I'm not totally sure how or who that will be yet, but we'll visit with Coach Klieman, the coordinators, and have a lot of features in that 2 hours leading up to breakfast with the Cats, as they say. I'm more into that now as opposed to those 9:30 starts, especially being on the road and having that again. It was really, I'm not trying to get anybody to feel sorry for me, but guys, I work at this on Sunday, some too, anywhere between 2 and 5 or 6 hours. I went right from the airport to the office.
Oh man.
Because I wanted to get it done and then be able to rest a little bit and then watch the Chiefs game.
Yeah. I don't blame you.
You do what you have to do, right?
You do. I mean, hey, it's better than digging ditches, as Jacob would always say. So, quick story. So, we went to the Royals game on Saturday, which is a totally other, you know, story. They've not played well recently at all. Right. We go to the Royals game. They moved the time up 2 hours because of the threat of bad weather coming in later that night. So all along, I thought, well, I'm going to miss the K-State game. I'm not going to be home in time. Well, the game started at 4:00. It was done by 6:30. By the time we got back to Wichita, I had plenty of time to stay up late and watch Kansas State. So schedule-wise, I guess that worked out. But I don't blame you at all for that late night and being a little bit tired and being glad that you're back at home. So, definitely. I'm sure that being back in Manhattan for this weekend is going to be pretty nice for you guys.
Dude, you fell asleep halfway through the second quarter, Tommy. Come on, be truthful.
True. I did.
Well, I didn't have that opportunity, nor did I want it.
Yeah, right. That's right.
I will say this. It was hard to lose that game, and especially the way they did it. But speaking of going to games, Tommy, if you ever have a chance to go out and see a game in Provo, you should.
Yeah.
It is a picturesque setting. Their people are really, really first rate. And I, you know, everybody's talking about Utah right now, and I get it. But they're going to be a player, too. This league is going to be tough, that's like right. always.
Yep, it's no just, doubt about it.
Just but what it is.
For sure. We're looking forward to Saturday morning as the Wildcats take on Oklahoma State. Of course, you can hear Wyatt and all the coverage right here on KFH. And hopefully we'll have a more positive discussion next Monday here on the program. Wyatt, we appreciate it as always.
Okay, can I say one more thing in about 15 seconds?
Yep, absolutely.
I just want you guys to know that Rhonda Klieman was listening to KFH.
Good.
She was there to see her son play and was driving back to Manhattan. So she at least caught some of the KFH part of the broadcast. So thank you for being an affiliate.
For sure. We love that. There you go. Yeah. We'll talk to you next week, Wyatt.
You got it, guys.
Have a great call on Saturday. Yep, there goes Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Wildcats here on Sports Daily. And like I mentioned, you'll be able to catch all of that coverage right here on KFH. This portion of Sports Daily brought to you by our friends at Prairie Fire Coffee, always keeping us hydrated and caffeinated, especially as we come off of a long sports weekend back on a Monday. So, of course, we always appreciate their support of the program. Also appreciate Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Wildcats, joining us. If you missed any of that or you want to go back and listen to any of his comments about K-State, about the BYU game, looking ahead to Oklahoma State, you can always find that podcasted and archived on the free Odyssey app. Paul, we're getting ready to wrap up hour one. I feel like this first hour has flown by. Still a lot to talk about in hour two, and we'll probably carry this conversation on after the top of the hour.
Right.
The Jayhawks, on the flip side, they go to West Virginia, to Morgantown on Saturday morning, and it was a weird game because of weather delays, and they didn't ultimately get to finish the game until late afternoon after an 11 a.m. Central Time kickoff. It was weird and wild, and the Jayhawks carried the lead for a good portion of the game, ultimately, West Virginia gets a 4-point win. What's weird, Paul, is that, of course, KU sits at 1-3 right now. In all three of their losses, the Illinois game, the UNLV game, the West Virginia game, all three of those games in the fourth quarter, the Jayhawks had a winning percentage likelihood of over 80% in all three of those games. And I think that in all three of those games, I believe at least that it's, you can point at the Jayhawks as the better team in each one of those three contests, although they lose all three games. These issues just continue, and now they're snowballing for the Jayhawks.
Well, I'll put it this way. You say the Jayhawks are better. I'm not 100% sure that was quite right. I had to tape that game and watch it. I couldn't watch it live, so I taped it and watched it, and I was able to rewind here and there, and I think they were. I think these are two pretty equal teams, which, in other words, I guess what I'm saying is I think West Virginia is underachieving at this point. But these are two decent football teams, very good football, better than average college football teams. But KU's not playing like that, are they? They're not doing the little things that they need to do to win football games. I think I still have a lot of confidence in this coaching staff, Tommy. I think that this is a good coaching staff. We know they're a good coaching staff. But somewhere along the line, they got to figure out, well, something's wrong. Something's got to be fixed. Something's got to change. You know, most of the time we say keep things consistent. But I think we're at a point now with the University of Kansas, in the way that they're playing, something's got to change. Something's got to be different. Make something different. Try not to work out everything that's going on now, because that ain't working.
The Jayhawks are 0-1 in Big 12 play.
That's right.
They're 1-3 overall. They're back at home. I guess home is Arrowhead Stadium on Saturday. It's a 2:30 kickoff taking on TCU. After the break, as we kick off hour number two, I want to dive in a little bit more on the Jayhawks, but Chiefs fans, don't worry. We'll have more on Kansas City moving to 3-0 in primetime after their win on the road last night against the Falcons. And we haven't even touched on the Royals yet, who had an abysmal weekend, an abysmal homestand. We'll get into that as well. It's all coming up for you as we get going on hour number two. So don't go anywhere. It's Sports Daily right here on KFH.
In Odyssey.